Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1999, Stopping the Hijacking of America.
Hello. Today, I want to simply state a few facts and make a few simple statements about what I believe. First, I want to tell you why I make these broadcasts every week. I make these broadcasts because America is being hijacked, and I want to stop the hijacking. America used to belong to me and to people like me, people whose ancestors came over here from Europe, settled the land, fought the Indians, and built a civilization here, a civilization based on the values and ideals that they brought here with them from Europe. Values and ideals which have belonged to my people for thousands of years. But America is being hijacked. It is being taken away from my people so that it can become the property of an alien people instead. It is being changed, perverted to suit their tastes and their needs instead of the tastes and needs of my people. I want to stop this hijacking. I want to take America back and make it the heritage of my people again. Now, I'll tell you how America is being hijacked and how I believe we must oppose the hijackers. This is a little longer, a little more complicated, but I'll try to keep it as short and simple as I can. My people who came to America from Europe had much in common. They were of one blood and one set of ideals. They came from many nations, from England and Scotland and Ireland and Norway and Sweden and Poland and Germany and Ukraine and Italy and France. But they had a common history when viewed from a perspective of thousands of years. There were bad people, weak people, corrupt people among my ancestors, and many very stupid and credulous people. But among my people, there also were many very good people, strong people, honorable people, and many wonderfully wise and creative people. Altogether, the good and the bad, the strong and the weak, our people formed a society with common values and a common heritage, and this society, this community of common blood and common traditions and common interests, overcame every obstacle and built a new country here in the Western Hemisphere. We knew how to cope with adversity and with our own bad elements. When someone like Bill Clinton popped up, we would give him a public flogging and put him in the stocks on a platform in the village square for a few days. If that didn't make him behave himself, we would drag him off to Gallows Hill, hang him in public, and be done with him. We had conflicts among our people, of course. We had struggle and injustice and pain in our lives. That's the way it always had been in Europe, and that's the way it was here, too. That's what had made us strong, the conflict and the struggle. It had made us strong because, on the whole, the better and the stronger of our people prevailed over the rest. Despite the pain and the injustice, we had joy in our lives because it was our world. It was the type of world we had lived in for countless thousands of generations, and we were adapted to it. But in America, we became careless, as we often had been careless in Europe, too. After we had whipped the Indians and tamed the frontier and built cities and railroads in America, we admitted into our midst a different and very dangerous sort of person who did not share our blood or our history or our values. We admitted the Jews, who in many cases looked physically similar to our own people, but whose souls were the product of quite a different evolution. They were the product of the marketplaces of the Middle East, where they had been bred for hundreds of generations. They came to us with false faces and false tongues, and we didn't know how to deal with them. They presented themselves as persecuted victims seeking freedom and justice, when in fact they were persecutors and victimizers seeking new victims. They spoke to us of the virtues of tolerance and diversity and openness and acceptance, when in fact they were the most exclusive and intolerant people on earth. They thought of themselves as a select race, a chosen people, superior to all other peoples and the rightful owners of all the wealth of every nation. In Europe, they had fomented revolutions and wars. One of them, Karl Marx, began a movement which eventually murdered 60 million of our people. And that's much worse than it sounds, because the murdering was done selectively, targeting the best of our people to be killed. Marx's movement never really caught on in America as a movement, but its basic ideas did, principally egalitarianism. In America, the Jews focused from the start on acquiring control of public opinion, control of the dissemination of information and ideas, control of the images of reality presented to our people. That really began in the 19th century, but for most practical purposes, it was in the 20th century that it became effective. The 20th century has been the Jewish century. It has been a century during which Jewish control of the mass media, of news and entertainment, has been used not just to consolidate Jewish political power and ownership of a vastly disproportionate share of America's wealth, but also to promote Jewish ideology, a Jewish vision of America. And when I say Jewish ideology and a Jewish vision of America, I don't mean the ideology and the vision that the Jews have among themselves. I mean the ideology and the vision that they want us to have in order to facilitate their hijacking of America. Part of the ideology they have promoted among us, as I just mentioned, is egalitarianism. That is the notion that all human beings are born essentially equal in their capabilities, whether male or female, whether black or white, whether from a family of achievers and creators, or a family of chronic losers. Jews did not invent this notion and introduce it to America all by themselves in the 20th century, of course. It is a notion which has been around a long time among certain elements of our own people. The Jews took it away from the cranks and crackpots, exaggerated it 100-fold, and popularized it, mainstreamed it. And throughout this century, it has been the Jews who have been the foremost promoters of the doctrine that tells us that if whites are more successful than blacks, it is only because white racism has held the blacks down. If more men are top corporate executives than women, it is only because of sexism. If one white person achieves more in his life than another, it is only because he was given advantages that the other did not receive. The egalitarian ideology also carries with it the notion that equality is not only a scientific fact, but also a moral fact. If people are not equal, then they should be. It is our moral obligation to try to make them equal. It is our moral obligation to fight against racism and sexism and homophobia and every other tendency to make people unequal or to consider them as different in some way. It is our moral obligation not to discriminate among people in any way, not to prefer women over men for certain roles in our society, or men over women for other roles, or to prefer whites over blacks for neighbors or schoolmates, or to think of heterosexuals as being healthier or more wholesome in general than homosexuals. That's part of the ideology the Jews have promoted among us. And another part is the ideology of individualism. That is the notion that each of us is an island entire of itself and should think of himself as such. We should not think of ourselves or of others as members of a race or a sex or any other collectivity, but only as isolated individuals. When we see a gypsy or a black or a Jew, we mustn't think, oh, there's a gypsy, or oh, there's a black, or oh, there's a Jew. We're supposed to think, oh, there's an individual. And we're supposed to shut out of our minds everything that experience has taught us about the general nature of gypsies or blacks or Jews. Individualism also carries with it the notion that each individual has a responsibility only to himself. A pregnant woman has no responsibility to the unborn child inside herself. A man has no responsibility to either his ancestors or to his posterity, and certainly no responsibility to his race. But ideology is only part of what the Jews have been promoting among us. They also promote feelings and emotions. The feeling of white racial guilt, for example, and white self-hatred. That is done on a huge scale and very skillfully, very successfully. It is especially effective with women, but also with men who are overly socialized. Men who look to the crowd around them rather than within themselves for their opinions and attitudes. The entertainment media, especially Hollywood and television, do this indirectly, almost subliminally, in their screenwriting and in their casting of heroes and villains. They also do it quite directly in their contrived coverage of the news. And I've given you some very cogent examples of that in recent programs. The result is that it has become fashionable among the most highly socialized whites to cheer the news that there soon will be a non-white majority in America. It has become fashionable to cheer for the Indians instead of the cowboys, just as it is fashionable to cheer for the Jews in any conflict with Gentiles, to cheer for the homosexuals in any conflict with heterosexuals, to cheer for non-whites in any conflict with whites. They have made political correctness fashionable. And even those whites who believe that they successfully have resisted becoming politically correct have, for the most part, been intimidated to such an extent by the atmosphere of coercive conformity generated by the media that they are terrified of breaking the most fundamental taboos, of saying or doing anything which may be thought racist or sexist or homophobic. They feel compelled to pay lip service to diversity and democracy and feminism and egalitarianism and individualism. This is what the Jews have done with their control of America's mass media in this century, mostly in the past 50 years. They have morally disarmed white Americans. They have disconnected us from our roots. They have alienated us from our own race, from our own heritage. They have made a substantial portion of us ashamed of our own race, consciously hostile to our own people, and they're working on the rest of us. That's what they've done with propaganda alone. But they haven't left it at propaganda. They are intent on destroying us physically as well as morally. That's why we have the ruinous immigration policy we do, which is flooding America with non-whites from the third world. That's why they are behind feminism, why most of the leaders of the feminist movement during this century have been Jewesses. That's why they're promoters of large-scale abortion, why so many abortionists are Jews. That's why they are virtually all in favor of gun control and of so-called hate crime laws. That's why so many of them have come out from behind the scenes in just the last decade and assumed formal posts of power in what used to be our government. And that's why they love Bill Clinton so much, not because he can't control his zipper, but because he lets them control the government. Our Treasury Department, our Defense Department, our State Department, our National Security Council, our relations with the United Nations, they control them all. If the Jews are able to continue their programs of moral and physical destruction for another 50 years, if we simply let them continue doing what they are doing now, they will pretty well have finished their hijacking of America. There will be no single group in America with the numbers and the will to oppose them. The country will be simply a conglomeration of mutually hostile and disorganized minorities controlled by the one truly organized minority. The Jews will control everything and own everything, and we will continue breeding ourselves into extinction, voting ourselves into extinction, hating ourselves into extinction. That is how America is being hijacked. What can we do about it? How can we stop the hijacking? You know, I've answered this question in a dozen different ways on earlier programs. Today, I'll try to answer it in yet one more way. But first, I'll take this opportunity to respond to two types of letters which I've been receiving from listeners. There are some listeners who tell me that all is lost, that it's too late to stop the hijacking, that we should have started 50 years ago, that all we're doing now is talking while the Jews continue consolidating their position. And occasionally, one of these listeners will run out and do something premature and foolish, commit some act of desperation because he is convinced that all is lost and it doesn't matter what he does. These listeners believe that unless we are on the barricades, actually shooting at the hijackers and their collaborators, we aren't accomplishing anything. And on the other hand, there are listeners who tell me that they agree with everything I say except my occasional hints that violence may lie in our future. They tell me I should never say anything which indicates that we will have to do anything other than vote our way out of our present predicament. I will answer listeners in both of these groups in this way. We must not bind ourselves with the notion that there is only one tactic which can lead to success. We must not believe that violence is the only tactic which can accomplish anything. If we believe that, then certainly all will be lost. But we also must not believe that voting is the only path to success, because that belief also will lead us to failure and extinction. We must understand that there are certain fixed principles which always must guide us, but that our tactics always must change to suit our present conditions and our present needs. We must be bound only by our vision of our ultimate goal and by our principles, but never by an inflexible commitment to one tactic or another. But you know, I promised to keep my comments today simple, so I'll not talk too much about ultimate goals. I'll just say that we want our country back. We want our world back. We want to live among our own kind and in accordance with our own ways, our own traditions. We want to stop the hijacking and begin repairing the damage caused by the hijackers. That's what we're aiming for. And our most basic principle is that we will do whatever we must do in order to achieve this. Life is the most important thing for us, the life of our people. We will do what we must, sacrifice what we must in order to safeguard and further that life, just as our ancestors did what they had to do to preserve and protect the life of our people, the life of our race. And as for our tactics, let us remember that they are not based on principle, but only on intelligence, only on a careful calculation of what is needed at the moment. And at this moment, talking is needed, much more talking, because that is our way of reaching out to others, of helping others to understand, of motivating others. If our talk were not important and also effective, our people's enemies would not be trying so hard to silence us. Did you know that for every radio station now broadcasting this program, the Jews have succeeded in forcing the owners of 10 other stations to cancel their contracts with us? The Jews apply pressure to a station's advertisers. They threaten the owner. Sometimes they even organize demonstrations outside the station in order to intimidate the people who work at the station. In the last few weeks, we have lost stations in Cleveland, in Houston, in St. Louis, in Austin, and in Monterey, California, as a result of these Jewish tactics. But we continue to find new stations, and the number of our listeners continues to grow. Talking is needed when it is directed toward a purpose, when it is not just idle chatter with those who already understand, but is directed toward those who need to understand. And I'm doing more than talking. I am reaching out to people through other media besides radio. I am reaching out with the printed word and with music. And I will be reaching out through video and through every other medium. Outreach at this time is essential. Building understanding is essential. Building our numbers and our resources is essential. Organizing the people we reach, or at least some of them, also is essential. The truth is that despite what the Jewish media would have you believe, despite their television image of an America consisting of a mindless, multicultural mass of happy lemmings, despite Bill Clinton's popularity polls, there are millions of serious and concerned Americans out there who are appalled at what the Jews are doing to their country, to their civilization, and to their race. There are millions of them who see the grinning, bloodthirsty predators behind the masks worn by our enemies. Millions who are horrified that our nation's armed forces are in the hands of the Jewish gangsters in Washington. Gangsters who are ready and willing to use their control over Bill Clinton to start a war whenever they think it suits their purpose. A war against Iraq, or against Serbia, or against anyone else who refuses to obey their orders and who stands in the way of their greedy, megalomaniac dream of total world domination. There are millions of people who perhaps have been intimidated into silence at the moment, but who still have eyes to see and minds to understand and hearts to hate what is being done to us. And they will hate what is being done even more as the Jews proceed with their filthy business. And so, once again, how will we stop the hijacking of our world? We will do it by reaching out to the millions of our people who care about the future, who care about their race, who care about the sort of world their children and their grandchildren will inherit, and who have not joined the degraded mass of lemmings who dance mindlessly to every tune played by the Jews and think only of conforming and consuming. We will reach out to them. We will help them to understand. We will try to help them find courage. And we will organize the best of them to reach out to others. That's what we are doing now. And when conditions change, we will do whatever else is called for. And you can be, you should be, a part of what we are doing. If you understand, if you have a sense of responsibility and a sense of honor, then you must join forces with me. Thanks for being with me again today.